Warning, this podcast contains rude, crude, and prude language, which might burn your ears if you listen to it for too long. Listener discretion is advised.
What's the kill condition? Like, that's the big problem, right?
I mean, Flores tried.
Yeah, the traps are not good if your opponents have brain cells.
That's a great line.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to you by ManaDeprived.com and 60cards.com. Check us out.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for mises they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team. KYT.
Everybody was metagaming against each other because we saw each other's decks.
Jay Boosh.
I'm not going to ask a homeless guy for a deck idea, okay? I'm going to give the guy some change, and, you know, I'll probably half my sandwich.
Smitty.
Just completely edit out Jay Boosh, like, out of the whole thing.
Scotty.
But what is it with people that live in French countries that like blue-white control? Are you guys just, like, you have that big of a chip on your shoulder? Like, what is it?
And now, the A-Team.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 24 of the A-Team Podcast. This is your host, KYT. Joined this time only with Scott and Jesse. Jay is actually somewhere cruising around in vacation in the Dominican Republic right now, right, Scott?
That's right. He's in an extremely gorgeous resort with his wonderful lady, and I'm sure they're soaking up the rays, so good for them.
What a bum.
But fear not, we have someone to replace him, and he was our guest for our most popular episode ever. Scott, I love when you say his name really loud so you can do your introduction. Who do we have today, Scott?
Jerry fucking Thompson, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, sir.
Oh, yeah.
There he is. Thank you very much, Jerry, for joining us again. Fantastic. Yeah. Love to have you.
Good to be here.
Nice. We've got an action-packed show with everybody's favorite subjects on tap. We've got some standard talk. We've got some besiege talk. We've got some pre-release nonsense. And Pro Tour Paris, of course, coming up. And Jerry, your upcoming events as well. And your Balls Out article, which is just generating so much awe-inspiring feedback. So we could also get into that. So without further ado, I guess... Unless anyone's got anything else they want to throw in there?
No, I'm just riding the train, bro.
No, you can lead the way, Scott.
Sick. Jerry, you got anything else you want to talk about a little later?
No, I mean, we'll just see what happens, I guess.
Sounds good. All right, so I guess, oh wait, what's that? hold on, what's that? Oh my god, we actually have another guest host tonight? Oh my god, KYT, man, take it away. Why didn't you tell me earlier? Go.
So, I was playing Thursday Night Magic tonight, and then I met this player that has been playing the game for a while named Adam, and he told me he loved the show and he'd like to be on, so, how's it going, Adam?
Pretty good. How's it going, Carr?
Very good. Hopefully this podcasting won't be, too awkward for you, and you will feel right at home once we get
hopefully.
Through all the tops.
I'm actually really excited to finally talk to you, Jerry.
As you should be.
So, Scott, what's our first topic? Are we going to jump right into standard, or would you like to go into anything beforehand?
Well, I think we can probably, like, did you guys play in your pre-releases at all? Jesse, I think you did too, and KYT, did you get a chance?
No, I didn't get a chance. Girlfriend's birthday, and
Right.
No
okay.
chance.
So I played. I met some cool people. Jesse played. Let's talk about that real quick, so we can give our first impressions about, you know, how it went with Mirrodin Besieged, and and how it added to the format, and then we can get into how it's going to change everyone's lives for the next, you know, 8 months or so.
Yeah, sounds good.
Cool.
You want me to roll?
I'd love that. Take
all
it
right,
away.
All right. So, I mean, obviously, Besieged, I think the main thing, I mean, Infect was a strategy before, but if Infect was a strategy before, it's definitely a strategy now. I mean, that's really what I take from it. The pools were, I went Mirren day one or night one. I did a 36 hour extravaganza and, that was a little rough, but, I went Mirren the first round, and I ended up ninth place out of 50, and I was the top Mirren player in that first pre-release. And then I decided to go Phyrexian the next, and it felt clearly stronger to me. But I mean, some takeaway cards I thought that were powerful was the frickin' giant spider that's undercosted. I freaking hate that card. Man, what else? Oh, that Viridian Emissary. Which one's the one that blasts the artifact when it comes in and it's a Grizzly Bear Infect?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, okay. Well, that card is a house too, but, overall, I just went X2, both pre-releases. Kinda meh. But it was fun. I definitely like Mirren more. I really don't like having to fight against the Infect guys. Actually, there was one other All-Star I'll mention, and that was the Sacrifice Imp, where he's an Infect Flying Imp for 4. He's a Grizzly Bear also. That guy won me multiple games just sacking my army and going swinging in for the kill. That thing's a beast.
Nice. So you found that Mirren was more... Mirren was generally more powerful, but or was your preferred play, but Phyrexian you found just seemed to be everywhere?
I was the top Mirren on that first one, but I was in the minority. I mean, there was only maybe 20% of the field opening Mirren packs, so I mean, there was a lot more Phyrexian. The next one was more Mirren, so I think it was – I didn't even stay till the end. I was so tired, I just left, but – I mean, Mirren was definitely more fun. I had the red-white flyers build in the first one, and I really liked that. I got some solid removal, but I really found out I had shatters in my hand all the time that were just dead as hell because I was playing against so many Phyrexians, and like hardly any of them had many artifacts.
There's just less artifacts in the set, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a smaller set, right? So overall, I guess. But and another funny takeaway is people who are playing Glissa, I was not scared of because it was in their Phyrexian decks, and I'd be at like a few poison counters and like 17 life, and they'd attack, and I'm like, all right, I'll take it. Glissa's awful, man.
Ain't strike.
Yeah.
I found that based on my experience, so I ended up playing in 4 flights, I guess, over the course of my pre-release. I went three flights, sorry, 2 X2s and an X1. To play, so that was cool. I went with Phyrexian the first time because I wanted to play all of the sickly powerful Phyrexian faction packs, and they were really good, except that my Scars packs, of course, were naturally Mirren and sucked really bad. So my first round Phyrexian, I ended up with, I think it was 2 playable rares, one of which was Masticore, so that's okay. Second one was the Phyrexian Negator, I guess. Is that the – or whichever one, the Pithing Needle on Legs or whatever?
Revoker.
That's one. So it was decent. I had, like, triple Rotwolf, double Blight Widow. You know, so, like, I had all of the solid Phyrexian common-uncommon sort of situations from Besieged and absolutely dick all otherwise. So I X2'd with that, and that was fine. And then I went Mirror in the second round, and I got absolutely just – the most disgusting Mirren deck, like 5 playable rares, including like Contagion Engine and a bunch of others. Like, it's just stupid. I ended up showing the list to John Smithers, and he's like, "You went what with this deck? Like X2? Are you on glue?" But it's just, you know, sometimes you draw 6 planes in a row when you need double mountains, right? And that's just how it is. But third one, I ended up going Phyrexian, and I got I opened a Tezzeret, and I was like, you know what? I really want to play, like, the long blue-black, you know, proliferate slash just tempo list. I ended up with 3 of the 4 casting cost 3/2 blue flyers, where when they go to the graveyard, each player discards a card. But I had 2 of the vivisections to kind of offset it. So I was able to literally, like, grind out. I got to tell you, Tezzeret is fucking ludicrous. Like, in this format, I was able to drop him Plague Mirror turn 2, turn 3 Tezzeret, turn 4 swing for 5 poison. Like, it was really badass. And then just keep digging after that and find a guy, play it, make him a 5/5, dig again, find a guy, yeah. play it, make, it was just like, it was totally sick and limited. It was awesome. So I'm really looking forward to how it all kind of went. I ended up X1ing with that one, so got some prizes, so that's cool. But, overall, I just kind of felt like it was, you're almost like at a disadvantage playing the Mirren decks. Like the Mirren decks were overall way more consistent, and all the ones that I saw were just like legitimately stronger. They were all red white and they were all, you know, sick and quick and fast and unforgiving. And, you know, it was really interesting. But what I found was is that out of both the Phyrexian packs and the Mirren packs, it's like all of those decks were designed to beat other Mirren decks. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's just so much artifact hate, and there's yeah. so much, you know, there's so many, like, Crush comes in now, and yeah. then Viridian Corruptor. Like, there's just so much stuff that is designed to try to kill out the Mirren decks that it's almost like you're fighting an uphill battle because everyone's out to kill you.
Crush was really a dead card often, too.
Yeah.
The one other thing I'll add about the set that I really think it adds like a lot more fun interactive plays. Like for instance, I was up against an Etch champion with the +4/-1 equipment on him and a bladed pinions on him. So this Etch champion is gonna beat my fucking face in, right? And I'm like, how the hell can I kill this thing? It's like what, 6/1? I'm like looking at my hand. I'm like, I'm just screwed. So I finally like realize I'm pretty tired at this point. I got a Perilous Mirror in my hand and a Blister Stick Shaman. So I play down the Perilous Mirror and Blister Stick Shaman my own Perilous Mirror to do the damage to his Edge Champion, and I ended up winning the game. So it's pretty cool. Like there's a lot of cool interactions in the set. I think it added a lot in that sense.
So Jerry, what do you think about sort of this new limited format that's being created with Besieged? Like obviously the reverse drafting order is going to play, but what's your take on it overall? Some insights?
What is the format? I heard random things about the faction being like the normal thing. Is that true? Like, does anyone know?
So what I've heard is that like for the purposes of pre-release and release only, that they're doing the faction packs, right? And then the faction packs are you draft two faction packs and one regular Scars pack, but and for like regular sanctioned play and everything after that, I believe it's one straight up mixed up Besieged pack and two Scars packs.
Okay. That makes drafting kind of weird, right? Cuz everyone just chooses whatever, like which faction they want.
For the release and pre-release, yeah, it gets really messy.
Yeah, so it's like if you're one of like two dudes that want to draft Mirren or whatever, and then there's like 12 Phyrexian packs, it seems terrible.
Yeah, except that when you think about the cards that are in the Phyrexian packs that happen to be like red white, you end up getting a lot of power out of them. Like the white instant for 1/2, where all attacking creatures get -1/-1 counters on them or something. Yeah. You know, which is really good if you happen to be scooping that up against Infect, obviously as the red white player. You get the Into the Core or whatever it is, which is like exile two artifacts, which is crazy in the red packs. You know,
Phyrexian. Okay, so it's still not that bad then, right? You still get the packs aren't going to be blank for you basically.
Correct.
Okay, so yeah, I guess that doesn't seem that bad. I didn't actually play at the pre-release. I was there for a few hours, but I didn't really know what was going on, you know? Totally. Too confusing. But yeah, I don't know. Like, just seems kind of like more of the same. You know, there's some crazy Infect stuff going on where you could actually just be like red-green or black-white or all these weird color combinations that you couldn't really do before, so that's kind of cool.
You're right, it is kind of a lot the same. Just heavier.
So, I'm just wondering, like, with all of these different color combinations, obviously, you now have the legitimate chance of facing down, like you said, like a black-white Infect deck that is designed to sort of, you know, mid-range. It's almost like Infect now has all the different tempo colors as well, tempo flows based on the color combos, right? Like, you'd have the black-green, the red-green, which are obviously going to be a hell shitload faster. You've got the black-whites, and the, you know, it's maybe a bit mid-rangey. And then you've got the badass blue-black, which is going to grind you out long-term proliferate, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's good. It's good to have different variations of these poison decks rather than just like, oh, I took a Plague Stinger, now I'm locked into green-black, and you just take the best poison card out of each pack. You know, now you actually still have to draft a deck. and you have that option to like switch colors and do all this kind of crazy stuff that you might not have had before. So it's going to reward people for actually knowing what they're doing rather than just taking the best infect card every time.
For sure.
Nice. Adam, what do you think, man?
I've yet to play with the new set. I don't even really understand the Mirren Phyrexian thing. Are there certain cards that are only in certain packs?
Yeah, so for the purposes of the pre-release, yeah, that's the way they separated it. But, I mean, just moving forward, I mean, the pack design is designed to be like five Phyrexian commons, five Mirren commons, and then you've got, you know, three uncommons which belong to one of the factions, and then the rare belongs to the other one. So like it's totally a dog's breakfast in terms of what you may actually get in mm-hmm. that first pack.
Huh, that's really weird. It's the only cool thing is that now the third pack and the second pack are reversed, so you're going to be opening the new set before you open the next two for scars. So I think you have to really be focused on like what your plan is for scars, because I could see people opening like a certain besieged pack and kind of getting blinded and going a certain direction and then being screwed when they get to scars, like taking white infect creatures or something like that, and then kind of being up a stream without a paddle.
Yeah, but is that worse than you drafting scars like hoping to open white infect creatures and then just bricking?
That's well true. The siege is one pack and then two of scars, so you're kind of screwed for two packs. I don't really know. I honestly I'm not the guy to ask for limited. I just open the packs and take the best card.
Totally. Okay. I think white infect creatures are bad to pick all the time. I can't think of a situation where you'd want to pick one of the white infect creatures.
The 1/4 seems insane in any deck.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
Maybe white's a bad example. Like maybe blue or something is a different thing because like that's more of something that you can actually do in scars when there's two packs.
Right.
Yeah, the Tyneshrike too. There's a white flying infect guy, and obviously flying infect is at premium all the time, right? So another good reason to look at the white infect is all I'm saying. Like if you're gonna splash it, I mean, and they're all only one, right? So if you're into like conceivably you could reach into, you know, I faced up against like a rock build, like a green white black infect build, and they were quite literally like primarily green. And they were able to reach, you know, lightly into the black. There was no double black, a couple of Karats, but no, like, grasps or anything. But they reached into white for both the Priest of Norn as well as the Tyneshrike and, like, double arrest. So it was worthwhile because, I mean, obviously part of the challenge is that the green-based infect deck gets is removal. So if you can reach into the white with, you know, some mana fixing or whatever – the white splashes can be pretty rewarding. So blew me at one of the games. Like arrest out of an infect deck? Are you fucking kidding me? It was pretty good. Anyways, so since we're also excited about talking about limited, why don't we move on to something that's a lot more exciting, which is standard. So Jerry, you had a wicked ass article this week, and it's got everyone talking about how large are this man's testicles? Because, you know, you're kind of like, hey, guys, here's three decks that I've built. Why don't you pick what I'm going to smash face with? Because, you know, I'm that good. So you want to talk to us a little bit about sort of what's led you to those three and why you think those three are probably among the top three to pick for positioning?
I don't necessarily think that they're the top three. It's just like for my deck selection process going into this tournament, I kind of wanted to try some new things, and the Kuldotha red deck is definitely really, really good, and that's the one that I'm hoping actually wins, and I might just play it. It's like behind by 1% right now, so like that's still pretty close, right? Like people aren't getting too mad.
I voted for a red.
I voted for Volokut because you can't do Volokut so good.
But yeah, it was just like I don't really necessarily know which deck is right, and as I said in the article, I just flipped a coin to decide my deck at one of the Pro Tours last year, and it was fine. It worked out. And I really don't think that the deck selection matters that much as long as your deck is tuned to beat the actual metagame. So at this point, it's just like, do I really care what deck I play? No. And like no one's really done this before, so I thought it'd be sweet.
Yeah, that's cool, dude. Are the lists open to change a few slots if you feel need be?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I definitely reserve the right to change whatever, yeah. Which I should have put in the article, I guess, but didn't. Like, I've been playing with the Shape into a deck a lot since the article was posted, and I've been playing, like, blue-red versions and blue-white versions, and I think those might be better than blue-black, or maybe I want to just add more removal, because the Kuldotha red deck is not getting a whole lot of attention right now. But I'm still not sure, like, how large it's going to be in Indy, and the tournament's going to be huge. You know, like, the last Indy was 650 people or whatever, so even if there are a lot of copies of this deck, like, it's very easy for me to dodge them. But, like, I could play against, like, two or three of them, too, so I'm not really sure. But this blue-black deck, like, I actually just can't beat it. So I was trying blue-red with Chlasm, or, like, blue-white with Day of Judgment is fine, but Ratchet Bomb is one of the best cards against them, and you just can't play it, you know, because of your polymorphs and stuff, so.
Right. I'm actually surprised at how much Besieged is going to change the metagame, it feels like, because going into, like, I've been trying to help some people with Paris decks and such, and there really seems to be a lot of options, which is crazy because I kind of didn't expect it. I mean, obviously the big dogs are still going to kind of be there and stay, but yeah, I mean, I'm really shocked at how many cards are fitting into decks and actually creating archetypes like the Kuldotha Red.
It changes stuff for standard, like basically nothing for extended, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't actually looked at extended yet as far as Besiege goes.
I played Kuldotha Red, Jerry, when you first posted an initial like sketch version of it, and I just kept beating people constantly, but obviously they were just game ones. But it, as you said, is really good. And even on Twitter and on Facebook, I post about how I love the deck. They're going to say, oh, it's just because it's early in the metagame. You know, it's always like this. All the mono red decks always win at the beginning. But I really think this deck is quite legitimate.
Yeah. Like, once you play against decks with Pyroclasm and stuff, you kind of figure out that Bushwhacker and summons are cards that you should probably just hold. And then you kind of nickel and dime them out. And then they're forced to Pyroclasm because they're at, like, 12 or something. And then you can just attack them for 10 on the next turn.
Yeah.
And there's a decent amount of sideboard cards, I think, that are good against that. Like, Bonehorde is something that I didn't post in the article, which I hadn't really thought of yet, but I think is pretty insane against those types of decks, too.
Jinx Idol seems insane to me.
Yeah, I'm not sure about Idol. I have to play some more games with that. Like, I don't know what plan you necessarily want to be on. If you're just trying to, like, go big with things that don't die to Chlasm, or if you just kind of want to burn them out with Idol, like, I don't think it's really... You can't really play both with the same plan, so... And one of my buddies is queued for Paris. Well, a bunch of my friends are queued for Paris. But he's looking to play a deck like this. So I kind of want to play that in the tournament just to test it for him, too.
Jerry, I have a question. Would Bone Hoarder, would any of the other swords as a miser be, like, I'm comparing it to Bone Hoarder as a card, be a consideration at all?
Yeah, I mean,
like, sort of Body of Mine and the new one?
Those are okay, but there's a lot of decks with different sweepers. Like, Blue-Black has Zenith and Ratchet Bomb. Blue-White has Day of Judgment and Ratchet Bomb, and then there's, like, decks with Pyroclasm and stuff. So whatever sword you play, you know, it might not be good against all those decks, whereas I think the Bone Hoarder thing is just basically good against anything. You know, if they're trying to – if they sweep your guys and you just rebuy with that thing, you know, you have, like, a 5-5, and then anything else that you play is just going to be huge. So I think that might just be a better plan. It's more hedging against the field rather than just playing, like, sort of Bonnie'd Mind because, like, Rug is a deck and they have Pyroclasm after board and stuff, you know?
Oh, right. I just always get scared for some reason when I'm playing a control deck and I'm scared a goblin guy is just going to pop open and then equip and then bash me.
I can't see... I mean, do you think Rug really is going to be... I mean, Rug's always a deck. I mean, there's no question. It just has done so much lately. But if everyone's going to be looking to try to push more aggro strategies... And I mean, maybe it's not everybody, but obviously a good chunk of the people with their finger on the pulse are going to play, try out some potentially more aggro strategies, whether they be Infect or whether they be, you know, like called off the goblins or something like that. It's going to be so many sweepers and stuff. I mean, is Rug going to survive if you just kill their Cobra on site? I mean, with the influx of red decks, isn't that sort of Rug's worst matchup?
Kind of. Like, it definitely seems like people are going to be leaning more towards aggro with a new format, you know, just something simple. They know the format changed, but this deck is always going to be good, and their blue-black deck might not be tuned correctly or whatever. So, but I don't necessarily know if people who are playing Rug think that far ahead and are just like, oh man, there's going to be a lot of aggro there, so I have to like play a different deck or whatever. It's like this weird kind of situation. But I mean, Rug was a good deck before, and it didn't really gain much. It doesn't get anything really flashy. Like Thrawn is good, but how good, I'm not really sure. And I don't know, it just doesn't seem like that will be a deck that people play because it doesn't have any of these new flashy things or whatever. Maybe that's not something to worry about specifically, but...
Yeah.
What do you guys think of aggro in general? I mean, the Kuldotha Red's so fast that it's feasible. I mean, something where, like, a green aggro deck or whatever just doesn't seem feasible to me with all the board sweepers that they've got printed now. I don't know. How do you guys feel about that?
You gotta find a way to play around them.
Sure.
Another deck is the quest for the Holy Relic deck. If people start playing Go for the Throat, it becomes better because they can't kill your artifact guys that are equipped with our Argentum armor.
Yeah. And I mean, that was embarrassing playing the Shape a New deck against the Kuldotha deck, too. You just, like, can't kill a Signal Pest with Go for the Throat, so it's, just, like, not even actually that good.
Yeah. So what about... Actually, Adam, you bring up a really neat point here, specifically about... a card that seems like it's going to get insanely better. And, I mean, it's going to go with a card, Jerry, that you've already mentioned. Like, how good is Stoneforge Mystic right now?
Oh, man, I love that
card. You know what I mean?
It's pretty sick. I was considering watching it.
You know, fetching up, like, a Bone Horde or something seems dumb.
It's real powerful.
I think it's definitely one of the scariest cards to... Even before Besiege, but now, you know, there's a lot more options. I don't know what deck I would want to abuse it the most in.
Yeah. You're well, like
Boros
quite literally.
Is a deck.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say Boros. And I mean, any sort of, if you could come up with some sort of reasonable green white aggro strategy, I mean, you could toolbox the shit out of that thing.
There's like four new equipments that are like reasonably playable, maybe more than that in the new set.
Yeah.
Green-white quest with Thrun seems really strong if you can get it to work. I was kind of playing with the list, though, and it seems tough like to not cut Vengevines for Thrun, if that's what you're going for.
Well, isn't Thrun just a bad Vengevine?
Well, yeah, but nice. Not with equipment on him. I mean, it's auto-win if you can get something on him, especially an Argentum armor. But
it seems
the
maybe like
the
a
haste.
Sick one of.
Yeah.
And you could still play Vengevine.
Fauna target.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, this Adam guy...
He's got all
the knowledge.
Yeah.
Well, actually, hear that Adam is actually, for some reason, even though he's relatively new, is qualified for Paris. So all this knowledge is quite useful for him, right, Adam?
Congrats, buddy.
I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, I'm still after my first PTQ. Man, how'd you qualify?
A lot of hard work.
I'm curious, Jerry. You've been testing the Shape a New deck and variants of it. It's actually... a legitimate deck, like all its variants and stuff. I haven't bothered to try. I've just been putting it off because the Kuldotha Red deck is so fun to play.
Yeah, I think it's fine. I mean, it's not as consistent as a normal control deck, but you play against something like Valakut and they just can't beat you anymore.
Wow.
Is blue-black, you think, the way to go for that, or is it fine in blue-white as well?
It depends, because if people are playing this red deck, then you need a sweeper. And blue-black doesn't really have a good one. Like, Zenith is fine, but not great. Yeah. So that's why I was looking at other options. Like, blue-red, basically just mono-blue with Pyroclasm. And then blue-white has a bunch of different stuff you can play. Like, you can play Stoneforge Mystic in addition to Trinket Mage to make your package a little more consistent.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get Wrath and all that sort of stuff. So, Master's Call, too, if you want that.
Mm-hmm. So I know that... I'd value your opinion, something that KYT got me onto, curse you, you bastard, and now I'm testing the shit out of it, is a variant of Kibler's Kago, but running White Sun Zenith. So as KYT is lovingly addressed it, it's Pago.
Right.
You know, getting kitty with it. But it's functionally the same sort of thing, right? You got a shit ton of wipers and land handlers, removal, counter spells, and you know big finishers. I mean, still a viable option here. I mean, seems better than blue black, I would think, right?
Yeah, I think that blue white deck is still good. Yeah. You gain like some stuff
red.
If you want it, but I don't think the Zenith is very good.
Really?
Well, I mean, what problem does it solve?
Yeah, it's just a cool card, guys. Your deck other than it's sweet.
I think it's kind of cool end of turn, because it's actually an instant, and those are kind of rare.
Yeah.
So you can fight Planeswalkers by playing it end of turn, and if they tap out to counter it, you can do something powerful on your turn.
Who is this guy, man? What fucking knowledge.
But it's so expensive.
Yeah.
No, and it is so expensive. I mean, if what I've been finding is, for me personally, like, I'm playing the full 4 days, three Gideons, like, aggro kind of just doesn't really work that well. You know, Ratchet Bomb's out the board as well, because, yeah, I don't lose to goblins with Ratchet Bomb on board, and 4 Day of Judgment seems pretty strong.
Yeah, your game
but it's okay. I'm not going to Indy, though, man, so it's good. You don't have to worry.
I'd still be scared of the Kalalfa red deck if I was Kago.
Yeah.
And I have been playing Kago since Kibler posted it, so.
If you don't have powder cakes, man, I don't think your matchup's very good, game one.
Oh, yeah, no. Game one is totally your dog, but, like, game two and three, I mean, you're bringing in purges, condemns, and extra sweepers, like, aggro's the dog, right?
Since I haven't played this deck yet, I'm gonna ask this, does the red deck just totally eat a D when the opponent gains life? Like, because I'm thinking, what's the freaking artifact card? Cost one to bring in, two to blow up, gain 5 life.
Elixir?
Elixir, yeah.
No, man, you have Warzone and a bunch of tokens and, like, Battlecry stuff. You're attacking for big amounts of damage. You're not, like, a Jackal Pop shock deck, you know? You're not burning.
So it is quite a bit of damage each
time. Yeah.
Okay. You're playing against, like, a white-black token deck, you know?
Cool. That deck, I mean, any deck should be scared of that deck. It's so fast on paper. Oh,
yeah.
My God. I'm going to have to sleeve it up.
I was testing against Bryce, who was playing one of Jesse's deck, and I just killed him 3 straight games.
Yeah. I'm thinking about just throwing in 4 Pyroclasm main for that damn matchup.
Yeah, I mean, if that deck gets big, you're going to have to.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the only way my deck could possibly beat it, but...
How much variance is there in the draws of that deck? How many of the draws are actually the nuts, and how many are kind of whatever?
It's probably like 70% the nuts, it seems like. There's so much redundancy with all the pumping and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm really not sure how well that deck mulligans. You know, it seems like it could be really terrible, but it also, like, all the cards are so powerful that maybe it's fine. But I think the main issue is just, like, drawing the right amount of lands, just, like, not getting screwed or flooded.
Uh-huh. Another thing, can you actually afford to play stuff like Lightning Bolt and Removal? Because it's kind of like
a power. Yeah, we're down to like 2 Lightning Bolts right now, and just for Nighthawk.
Ah.
It's tough to build.
I was reading your article, Jerry, and I think, well, from my games, I felt Lightning Bolt was better than Blast. I never really had Metalcraft, and I do agree with you. I felt, how do you pronounce this? Chimeric Mass?
Chimeric.
Chimeric.
I used to think it was also a mainstay, but while playing the deck, I felt it was too slow for some reason. And like,
it is too slow. Like, Nick Spagnuolo wrote an article today that also kind of featured this deck a little bit, but he has, like, 4 Devastating Summons main, which is another card that's good against sweepers. You know, if you sandbag that in Bushwhacker. But Mass is always mediocre, but it's kind of something that you need. I think 2 is on the low end, and 2 is how many I post in this article, but, like, this list has changed a lot since I posted this, so I'm not sure if I'm playing, like, 3 or 4 now or what, but there's definitely going to be some of those in the deck. I think you need it.
There's still a lot of different cards that are tweaking. I've seen, I think it was Guillaume Matignon post some, that was a completely different list, but I've seen lists with, like, a full playset of Flare Husk, so... I don't know what your final list will end up being like, so I'll be curious to see that.
Yeah, once I don't know what it'll be like either. Like, I'm sure between now the tournaments and the Pro Tour, it's going to change a lot.
So all this Kuldotha Red talk, you're probably not going to go by your poll. I have a feeling you're just going to play Kuldotha Red anyways.
No, the poll right now is like 41% for red and 42% for blue-black, so...
Yeah.
I still feel Shape of New is going to win, just because it's, you know, Shape of New. Like,
it probably will. It's up by a percent. But
I really hope not. I'd rather see you, man, the red.
Adam, did you vote?
Yeah, for Shape of New.
Oh, you silly bastard.
The worst part is I did too. I voted for Shape of New as well.
I voted for Volaku. That was a mistake.
Can we talk about Guillaume's deck, Carr?
You kind of... I forget, it was just some, just Goblins deck without all the artifacts that,
No, what about his Genesis Wave Tezzeret deck? That deck was sweet.
Yeah, he had many lists.
Where do you find this stuff?
Star City Games?
Oh.
He writes for them now. You know, Jerry also writes for that site.
Yeah. Jerry, what's your opinion on that Genesis Wave deck? Like, I feel like the triple green is really greedy. It's like it's the only green splash. Is it, I mean, what's your thought on that? Is it, I mean, obviously it's powerful, but is it worth
it? I don't know. I didn't look at it too much. I just saw, like, all the different cards that were in it, and it looked awesome. It's probably hard to cast. You said the mana base was bad.
That's how Jerry evaluates decks. It has to look awesome first.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't necessarily, but it definitely gets my attention.
We were on the subject of Blue-White. I just want to get in this because Adam split the finals of a Premier recently with a slight variant to Kago, Gravitational Shift, and Emery Angel. So, Adam, do you think the strategy is going to be good post-Besieged?
Yeah. As long as it's actually pretty sick against the red deck.
Agreed.
And aggro in general. So Shift is probably better than it's ever been. And as long as Blue-White as a strategy is fine, which I'm sure it will be, it seems like something to look into. It's pretty powerful. It's kind of like a prison card that shuts them down, and it also is a great way to make your Squadron Hawks kill Planeswalkers and kill them pretty quickly.
And you're only playing a Miser's copy in the main, right?
Mm-hmm. So I played one main and one side.
Do you think you're going to play more, or going to keep it the same?
It's possible. One and one's probably smart. We don't want to get too crazy here.
Bird deck.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at the Tezzeret. There's a lot of talk about people trying to make Esper work with Tezzeret control, like Matignon's first list, for example, which is almost like, well, I guess that's only blue-black. But putting in the white for Venser as well, just to try to get the maximum value. They're spine decks, right? I think we heard about that as well on UMTG Taps. Joey called it a Spencer deck, you know, Venser with the spine of Ishta, which, you know, seems like it could be a really good card if you can actually survive to turn 6 or 7 against a field of Valakut and Kaldathic Goblins, but you get the idea, right? Pardon me.
Yeah, spine seems a little slow.
Yeah. In what world, man? All these cards costing 6 are like nothing now.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of why I want to play this red deck too. It seems like people are just like, hey, I'm gonna play like my sweet new 6 or 7 drop, and they're just gonna be dead on turn 3. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a great
every single turn to die, but you know, it's definitely one or the other.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. I think if that Kuldotha deck or something similarly fast wins the Star City Games this weekend, it's going to really impact people's expectations for Paris.
Yeah, agreed.
When I've been brewing, I like just assumed, I mean probably wrongly and incorrectly, that aggro would pretty much, you could almost get away with like not planning heavily for it. Like we are just kind of starting with Volokut blue black, assuming most people are going to be jumping on that route unless they figured out some crazy tech. But I think Star City Games is going to contribute a lot to this.
Right, Jesse, last episode didn't you actually say that aggro is not possible?
Yeah, I absolutely did, and I still don't think it, but until I saw the Kuldotha red deck, I think something that fast is like extremely viable. But in like testing, just I mean, I think Elves is actually close to a real deck because if you do play it smart. I think Green Sun Zenith makes the deck so much more powerful. You don't have to play Eldrazi Monuments because you can just use the Green Suns to find your extra Azuris because he's usually your win condition anyways. Leatherback Baloth has been the biggest beast on turn 2 that you could probably do in the game right now. I mean, I know that some people are running like Doomblades, blue-black or whatever, but that is such a powerful card coming down turn 2, and then you just follow it up with just Mana Accelerant, whatever. And then you got Lead the Stampede, and you can play like 20 lands. So you got Draw Spells, you got Fauna Shaman, you got Toolbox. It's a pretty powerful deck, I think. Not interacting with your opponent always sucks, but, you know, I love tapping Elves. Not in a gay manner.
So Adam, you were talking a little bit about Extended. You wanted to touch briefly on that as well, right?
If you want. I'm pretty much done with Extended now. basically, I would play either Fairies or the blue-green Scapeshift deck that Jerry Thompson loves. Those pretty much are awesome and play Cryptic Command. And everything else is kind of weak.
Matthias, well, I love you. God, they broke that format.
Yeah. Well, it's like you either play Cryptic Command or you'd lose, right? Sort of where
yeah. Maybe this red deck is ready for extended. Get some powerful stuff in there. Jerry, any ideas?
Do we gain anything?
No idea.
Well, I mean, definitely might be good enough, right? Like the blue-green Scapeshift stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just demolishes it.
The standard Velika deck with Scapeshift is good in extended too. That doesn't have Cryptic.
Yeah.
I mean, it probably should, but...
Are you kidding? The mana base that's available in extended, there's no excuse not to play Cryptic Command.
Yeah, you just gotta J-way it up.
That's right. Nice. So, Jerry, you're obviously heading off to Indy. You've got a Legacy deck under your belt there as well, or what?
Yeah, just playing the same counterbalance deck. Nothing special.
Well, don't...
I do have a question, Jerry.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
My question is just random. Do people actually playtest for Legacy? It feels the guy who beat you, what's his name? Ian, was it?
Yeah, he doesn't play at all.
Right, like in the interview, he's like, okay, you know, my friend just took decks and Goblins was left, so I just took it and play it. And I talked to Michael Hedrick, you know, Ship It Hall of Fame, because he top 8ed or top 16 with Merfolk'd, and he's like, you know, I just grabbed the deck and went with it. So how many people, even with Star City Games making these events, does anybody really care about this format?
Well, there are Legacy players, but then there are those guys who, like Ian and Hetrick, are both like very good PTQ players. You know, they've played on the Pro Tour a few times or whatever, or like maybe Hetrick hasn't, but he's good. You know, he's good. And they don't have a reason to play Legacy because it's not a PTQ format. That's what they're trying to do. But there are Legacy players, and then there are people like me who like the format, but I still don't get to play it. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to buy into Legacy on Moto and start getting like Force of Wills and stuff and start actually testing for these Star City events, because like every time I go into an event, I just, you know, haven't played any games, so that kind of sucks. But
I love Legacy.
Yeah, same.
I think another thing is that there aren't really many tournaments. Like, a lot of people, to test for bigger tournaments, play smaller things, and it's hard to find Legacy tournaments besides maybe some local weekly, you know, 20-man tournament. And Moto Legacy is kind of weak. There aren't too many players, and there aren't too many events.
Yeah, I think it's getting bigger, though.
Yeah, it is.
It seems like with Masters 4 and the duels being really cheap, mm-hmm. and then they had the theme decks being released and stuff. These dailies have been hitting like 40 people pretty consistently, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, starting to fire, which is pretty nice.
I'm on the verge myself, so yeah.
Yeah, get in there.
I know, eventually.
We need some dead money.
Yeah.
There's enough already in Legacy.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I just feel like someone like you guys could just work on the format and be so far ahead, because most people aren't just... I mean, there's one GP a year or something like that that's dedicated to Legacy?
Yeah, there's like one American, one foreign one, I think. But the Legacy tournaments that I've done well in, I have been so far ahead. Like Reanimator and Survival were both obscene decks, and no one had good lists for, or like didn't know how to play them or whatever.
So
that's what we keep seeing you up there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have like 4 finals finishes, and 3 of them are Legacy, and that's the format I don't play. So.
Go ahead.
No, please, go ahead.
I was saying, on GGS Live, people were crying out for the land tax deck for whatever you had.
Yeah, we played a few matches.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, he built a stacks deck, and then I was just playing the counterbalance deck that I had. But it's like, if land tax stacks is a deck, you know, my deck would have to change probably. So it wasn't really fair, but I was still beating him like 2-3 or something. Or 2 out of 3.
Nice.
But, yeah, the Lantax didn't really add anything to the deck. It didn't fix any problems. He had, like, some scroll racks and stuff, but it's like you don't really need a card drawing engine. You need to just get to 4 mana and start playing threats and, like, get those threats to resolve. But a lot of the games I was just playing Tarmogoyf and countering 2 of his spells and he would die. So.
Right, nice. You were right. Mr. Thompson was right.
Yeah, but there's still a bunch of ways you can build a Lantax deck. Like, you could build a control deck and that would probably be good, but...
No, is Lantax legal in Legacy now?
No, it's not, but Chapin, like, we were talking about what cards could be legal, and I suggested that one, and then he just yelled at me, basically, for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. So that's the first thing this Adam guy didn't know, that land tax isn't legal, man.
No, I did know that. I just asked if it was, if maybe it was.
It was legal now.
Yeah. So quiet, Jesse.
My bad. It's all right. We need a J-Bush replacement because, you know, no one's giving me a hard time yet.
Well, yeah, fair enough.
Mostly.
I'm just not sure how I would approach this format. Like, I had this tournament, this invitational small thing I had to go to, and just pick what I felt. It was between Merfolk and Affinity. I just picked up, like, the easiest deck, and it was the cheapest by far. Affinity just doesn't have any Force of Wills, any duels, and I was able to do well because the other Legacy players weren't that great. And but I wouldn't know how to approach the quote-unquote real decks of the format and start brewing at all. There's so many cards. Like, I'm just totally intimidated.
Yeah, a lot of players who play it have been played for forever. Like, me and Jerry have played for a while. So
what?
It's kind of natural.
So it's natural for you to know about, like, all, like, I just started. When did you start, Adam?
Urza's Legacy, 99.
Okay. I've had to have taken a bigger break than you because I started, Urza's Destiny, so right after you.
Yeah, I know that. I actually read that on your Facebook today. Yeah, I played straight through. No breaks here. Just throwing Kenyers away.
And then some.
Yeah, 12. Fuck.
Jerry, when did you start playing? I don't know if we asked you ever on the other cast or not.
My first tournament was the Invasion pre-release. I think the set that had just come out when I started playing against friends was Mercadian Masks, so like a year before that.
And Masks started right after Destiny, so about the same time.
I think one of the mocks slot at the end of last year was Invasion. God, I did awful. That set was terrible.
That set was sweet.
Oh man, I just suck. I went into it blind and just it was a wreck of a pool.
The format's tough. Your pool was probably actually insane and you just had no idea, but it's really hard to figure that out, especially in that format if you haven't played it before.
Yeah, absolutely. I was looking at these cards and I'm like, oh my god.
I had two Armadillo Cloaks in my sideboard.
Yeah, I mean, that could be right. If your red cards are insane.
I'm sure they weren't.
I do have a question from one of our Twitter followers for you, Jerry. Are the Star City Games Open appealing enough that you would go to one over a concurrent GP?
Right now it is, for sure, because I have all the points that get me free entry and two buys in each tournament and stuff. So I'm hitting all the Star City tournaments this year, and then I skip Grand Prix Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, you did. But I thought that's because you wouldn't go to – where does it lead to? Nagoya, right?
What's that?
I thought that's because you didn't want to go or to PT Nagoya.
No, but I'm already qualified for all the Pro Tours. I still like the Grand Prix.
Okay, right.
And I like Extended. Okay. I would like to play the format, but it's whatever, and I get to, you know, cut down on travel costs. And the Pro Tour points aren't that relevant for me, I don't think, because I'm not putting in the work to try and get to level 8. But for the Star City stuff, like, I want to get to their level 8.
So I guess if your focus is the Star City events this year, and that's awesome, by the way, your deck building then, I guess, for the year will primarily be focused in the Realm of Standard.
Yeah, Standard, and like I said, I want to start playing Legacy on Moto. But I played a lot of Extended, just because it was the PTQ season and my friends, and it was on Moto and stuff. So it's, I don't know, there's only so much work that you can do for Standard and Legacy for, like, two tournaments a month, so I have to spend my time doing other things.
Yeah.
I'm excited for this weekend and the next. It's going to be some good web TV, and GBS Live and Star City have really upped the cameras on those things since that last tournament. It just improves the experience so much more.
Yeah, the coverage is getting awesome.
It really is. Like, the whole team thing was a big ups. I mean, they killed it the last event Joey and Gavin did.
Totally.
So I'm looking forward to this weekend, like, especially the new set and everything. These are the best weekends to watch.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think it's JVL and Adrian Sullivan this weekend.
Nice.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, they were really good too. They got a lot of good feedback from the community in terms of their efforts on there as well. So it's definitely going to be awesome. Right. And then we've got Pro Tour Paris the week after that, right?
Right.
It is.
And then Grand Prix Denver the week after that.
Sick. What's the format for Denver?
Sealed.
Interesting.
All right. Over under 5.5 Tezzerets in the top 8 on Saturday.
Ew.
On Saturday?
Yeah, it's standard day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I said it right. Quit confusing me.
I gotta go under on that, bro.
All right.
I think under is probably the safe bet.
Yeah.
If you did that for the Pro Tour, I might take over.
Yeah, I was just gonna say the same thing. Sick.
All
right,
that makes sense. I like that. The pros could probably, well, I mean, I guess they could craft it a little better.
Yeah. It just seems like they're more willing to work on those types of decks. And at Worlds, everyone played like blue black or blue white, so they're probably more interested in doing something like that.
That actually brings up a really interesting point. Do you find that the type of decks that are often played by players differ greatly from something like a Pro Tour environment to like your Star City Invitationals? Is there like a trend that tends to be more prevalent in one than the other?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it seems like Pro Tours being composed of primarily good players, you know, they, like a high percentage of them tend to gravitate towards control decks. So, you know, at Worlds, everyone was playing blue-black, and some were playing blue-white. And in the Star City thing, that doesn't necessarily happen. Like, you see the good players still just playing, like, Valakut or whatever because they know that they can top 8 with it or win the tournament with it. But these guys just enjoy playing control more or feel like they have more control over the game or whatever, you know? It's just a tendency that good players tend to have is that they want to play control decks.
Hmm. Interesting. So, but, I mean, doesn't that seem like the properly – I guess it makes metagaming obviously radically different between the two environments, but conceivably easier then in terms of the pros? Or is everyone just, you know, like Pro Tour, everyone just keep trying to forward think and next level each other at every step?
Well, like 8 years ago, when the Pro Tours were all constructed, the Japanese would always show up with a deck that crushed control, but was like pretty soft to aggro in game one, just because they knew if they made it to day two, like they would just cut through the field.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's clever.
So that was a lot easier for them, I think. You know, like them, like Kenji with his like Gifts control deck, basically. You know, he wasn't very good against aggro, but he had this sick Psychotog engine with Life from the Loam and stuff that was really good against control decks.
Makes sense.
Speaking Japanese tech, Jerry, is Pyromancer Sedgid potentially still a deck?
In Extended?
Standard, maybe?
What's the kill condition? Like, that's the big problem, right?
I mean, Flores tried.
Yeah, the traps are not good if your opponents have brain cells.
That's a great line. I like it.
Yeah, I was just going through old deck lists. I'm like, hey, Pyromancer Ascension. Could it work? Yeah, probably not.
Okay, so
if we had Time Warps, it would still be good.
Yeah. On that note then, okay, so obviously we've established that Tier 1 sort of look like Blue-Black Valakut. Goblins potentially are right there. Blue-White's going to be prevalent. You're probably going to see some Rug. What are some of the Type 2... you know, the Tier 2 fringe decks that you think you may actually run into at Indy this weekend that got a big boost from Besieged?
As far as getting a boost from Besieged, like maybe Tezzeret or, you know, some sort of Steel Artifact type deck. But there's like Quest, Vampires, Bug. Like all those decks kind of suck, but...
You played Vampires twice, Jerry.
Yeah, I did. Well, see, it sucked because the first time I was like 7-0 and doing really well, but that made me feel like the deck was better than it actually was. Mm-hmm. So then I kind of got tricked and played it again, but then learned my lesson.
So could you tell us what that, you know, the first time you Facebooked, you said, I got my deck, thanks LSV. What was that deck then? It wasn't Vampires.
It was Vampires.
It was Vampires. Okay.
I was just talking to him about Blue Black and gave him the reasons why I didn't want to play it, and was like reading Ifro's article, and I'm just, you know, throwing ideas against the wall. Basically, I'm like, what about this deck? What about this deck? And then I got to Vampire, and he's just like, eh, like it wasn't a for sure no. So I'm just like, all right, we're in.
All right, so what do you think about Blue Black Vampires in if aggro isn't relevant? That's a pretty good little slice in the meta, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely hate on Valakut and the control decks. You can play a million discard spells, but
yeah, we have a local player that just rocks our FNMs with that. But it's pretty much a dog to any aggro.
Yeah, I mean, like you have to predict the metagame really well, but you still have to get good matchups too.
Yeah,
which is tough.
I think
you know, so. Even if you're good against 80% of the field, you can still just run into the two bad matchups in a row and you're dead. So I'd rather just hedge in these big tournaments, because Indy's going to be minimum 10 rounds, maybe 11.
Right.
Like, it's going to be pretty insane, so I just want something that is capable of beating everyone.
Sure.
Yeah, tournaments are pretty random. You have no idea what you're going to play against. Like, I played Vampires in San Diego.
Oh, God.
And I played against zero Jund decks. So, like, you have no idea what you're going to play against. So sometimes playing a deck like that can end up very badly for you.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You played that shit at Worlds, right?
Who?
Adam.
No, I played Valakut, and I regret that.
No, I mean the year before.
No. Worlds? Where was that at?
Wasn't that
Rome? I played Mono Green.
Okay. Awesome. Oh, yeah, right.
That was awesome.
Did you and Todd Anderson have the same deck?
Yeah, I actually got convinced to play Elves because Todd Anderson's wife, Callie, I wasn't sure I wanted to play, and she's like, yeah, this is awesome. Here's my deck. Test it out. And I just started crushing everyone, and it was pretty sick, so props on that.
Nice.
Where have you been? You've been awfully quiet, Scott.
I'm listening. I'm soaking all this in, guys. Are you kidding me? You guys are the voices of reason, experience, and, you know, overall coolness here. I mean, we just kind of have to bask in it and soak up what we can. Come on now.
And be the punching bag.
Yeah. Jesse's the goggles some days. So, anyways, yeah, what else do you guys want to talk about? I mean, is there anything else that's sort of on the horizon for you guys that may be exciting or interesting? I mean, you know, open plug session if you'd like. Jerry, you want to talk about any literary work that you've got forthcoming or what?
I got nothing. I think I put my book on the back burner for a minute, and I'm gonna work on doing some strategy projects in the meantime.
Hmm.
So, not really quite sure. If you guys have any ideas for like ebooks or whatever, something you'd like to see, something more general maybe, definitely just let me know. I have an idea right now, but, until I actually get further along, I don't want to say anything.
Okay.
Because it might be bad.
Matt, speaking of which, have you any of you guys seen that advertisement for Terry So's brother?
Who? Joe So?
What?
Yeah, he has this, like, website that's, you know, charging for strategy. One of those typical advertising sites, like, that's been way overdone for many years now. And Jerry, you've seen it?
No. Is it? It's for Magic, right?
Right, it's for Magic. It's like one of those sites that, you know, at the end, you know, 2 weeks left, special price. Like, the typical thing that makes me go a little bit like, eh, so I don't...
The Mike Long?
Right. Like, exactly like that, really, actually. Or that thing you were part of, Adam, that... ProTourLifestyle.com, you know, that site that tried to be something. But MTG Insider was somewhat legitimate, because I was part of it, and I did get, you know, some decks from them and some feedback and discussion. It wasn't, you know, an outright scam or anything, so. Though it was run by Mike Long.
Yeah, Mike Long is a sicko.
Well, there's definitely ways to run a website like that that would actually be really good, right? So, it just depends on who's involved.
Right, definitely.
Jerry, I know that, I guess it was a couple years ago, was it, that you and Patrick put up something on eBay where you basically sold off, what is it, a week or a weekend or a long weekend or something, and you had a couple people come down and basically spend Magic Boot Camp with you guys?
Yeah, that was him and Michael Jacob. It wasn't me. I think I was going to do the next one or something, but...
Whoa.
But he never did it. But I definitely remember those, like him and MJ doing a 3-on-3 draft with the guy that paid for that. And I'm not sure, like I didn't get to talk to him, but I imagine he had definitely a good time and then probably learned a lot of stuff too, but.
I actually met the guy.
Yeah.
At a tournament. Yeah, he seemed pretty cool. I'm sure that'd be a pretty good experience if you had a couple really good players teaching you and.
Yeah, for real. Did he seem excited? Like, did you talk to him during?
Truthfully, Adam, tell us all about that.
I forgot what tournament it was, but he was at the tournament with Pat, and Pat was kind of introducing him to people, and yeah, he seemed like a pretty nice guy, and he sounded like he was learning from Pat, so yeah, he definitely had a good time with it.
You were talking about a project, Jerry. I mean, that you were looking at a strategy project. I mean, something like that, if you had the time, would likely be A, lucrative, and B, probably really well received, man.
I'd sign up.
Yeah, the problem is there's not a whole lot of disposable income in Magic, you know? Everyone's complaining about, like, Jace being $100, so why are they going to pay me $500 or something to teach them things?
It's interesting you say that. Yeah, because a lot of these sites, they can afford to, you know, hire all these writers and do all this content, and that's because they make so much money off the singles.
Right.
And so the people are kind of paying for that by buying cards. And for something like a boot camp or an insider, they don't have to pay for it directly.
Yeah, a lot of people just appreciate the articles with deck lists and stuff. You know, they want you to give them fish and not teach them. So it's very rare that you're going to come across an individual that actually just wants to learn. You know, he's just like a blank slate and realizes that.
I'd be totally down interested in this.
Yeah, see, it's very rare, though.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know, man. With the volume of Magic players that we've got out there, you know, that we all reach on a regular basis through, you know, your articles and, you know, podcasts and tournaments and coverage and all of that stuff, I'm sure you'd find enough that it would be worthwhile if we tried to put something together, I would think. I mean, like, obviously intimate one-on-one, you know, or in small group, you know, sessions are going to be, you know, the most valuable. But, I mean, like, you could probably fuck, you know, either one of you guys could run an entire seminar and still we would just be, like, in awe. You know what I mean? Magic players are like that. I mean, we're freaky about knowledge and information, at least the ones that, you know, would take something like this remotely seriously.
Yeah. Right, but we're also very lazy, so it's going to be difficult to organize and teach an entire seminar, you know?
Why are we Magic players so cheap when it comes to strategy? I mean, I don't get when people complain about premium and stuff from, like...
I know.
As someone that's always really hardcore at poker, in poker at one time, you know, like, you had to pay $15, $20 per month for some of these sites, or you had a startup fee of $200 initial to be able to start that monthly stuff, and I was actually, you know, had no problem paying for that knowledge, and compared that to go to premium and have it be like, what's $5-6 for 3 months or something ridiculous like that, and then people still complain about this. I don't see how, you know, this whole training idea, like you mentioned this, Jerry, how it would be received by people, but I personally would be all for it coming from like poker to Magic.
The thing is, like, I think Conley hit it on the head in one of his, one of the Monday Night Magics or whatever, when he said that people have to realize that Magic is like golf, you know? Like, the sooner people realize that you have to treat your Magic hobby, if it's really your hobby and not just, you know, something you're doing to kill time, you know, and you're getting strategy articles, you're reading, you're looking for deck lists, you're a PTQ grinder, whatever it is, like, do you have any idea how much people spend on golf in a year? It's fucking ridiculous. You know, you're spending thousands of dollars every year on golf clubs. You're spending whatever the hell you're paying on golf memberships, right? And then you got to pay cart fees, and you're paying for fucking apparel, and you're going to pay for lessons and all that shit. It's just ridiculous. Granted, not everyone plays golf. I get it.
But you don't have to buy Jace's.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah, instead you buy your R7s and you pay, you know, or whatever. Like, it's ridiculous.
People who golf, though, like, take showers and have money.
Probably also true.
All right. I'm sorry.
But, no, I hear you. I hear you. I'm all for, like, I feel like I'm a pretty solid player and I'm on the verge of, like, doing well in PTQs.
Greatness.
No, but, like, I would absolutely, like, pay, like, $100, sit down with a pro and, like, pick their brain solid for an hour. Like, for a seminar or something, like, it would be epic. Like, I know I need it.
It's one of the reasons that I think we were all really excited about going to the Magic Cruise and sitting down with pros like this. Like, that's the environment. That's the sort of exposure that, you know, we players are dying for. It's that interaction. It's not just sitting across from you guys randomly because we happen to 2-0, you know, our first two rounds and you're coming fresh off your buys and it's, oh, I get to play against Jerry. No, that's cool and all. I'm sure, you know, it's an educational thing, but to be able to really sort of have that back and forth interaction, focused on, you know, an end goal in mind that isn't you trouncing your opponent's ass at the game, I think is definitely well valued.
Yeah, you mentioned the cruise, but how well is that received? And, like, how many people on that cruise are actually diehard tournament players as opposed to, like, a mostly casual crowd and stuff like that?
I do agree that the minority might – or the majority might not go for it just because, like, so many people are lazy. I know I'm driven, and I'm always playing and testing and blah, blah, blah. I put so much effort into it, but that's why I'd want to pay for something like that. But so many people are just like, yeah, just toss me the list and – like, they just theory talk on Twitter and et cetera.
But you see, here's the thing. Like, so in my walk of life in terms of business, I mean, it's always about I'm never the cheapest and, you know, I'm always going to make sure that the people that, you know, are going to get the most out of the service or most out of, you know, the experience with me is that those are the ones that are going to pay. And I think that, Jerry, like, something like that's completely viable, and there is a market. And I 100% agree with you that there's so many kitchen table people that are going to the Magic Cruise, and that's what they're doing because it's fun. But, I mean, you can't group the kitchen table group all in one group either because, you know, I'm a kitchen table player. There's no question. Like, I love going to tournaments, and I'm competitive as all hell. Am I a PTQ grinder? No. You know, I'm the first to admit I've got one hell of a head for the game in terms of being able to talk, you know, strategy and understand and you know, pick up on things and learn, you know. But mechanically, I'm fucking terrible at this game. I make so many bad play mistakes. It's disgusting. Smithers and Sam's were just laughing their face off at me on the weekend. you know, but that's the thing. But I'm like Smitty, I'm driven to be better, you know. And I think that breed of person is exactly who you want for something like this.
Yeah, definitely.
And we're out there.
Yeah. Get paid, well, son.
We'll have to get into it.
It's worth thinking about. It's all I'm saying. And listeners, if it's something that you guys are interested, then email us at mtgateam@gmail.com and let us know all about it because we'll share it with Jerry. And I'm sure that if we can pay him enough, he might just join it.
Leave some comments.
Leave some comments. So anyways, food for thought.
Who owns, like, I'm just curious, who owns Chapin's book? I haven't had the chance to get it myself
yet. I have it.
Because I've always wondered how, because cards, there's always new cards, there's always new sets, you know, compared to golf or poker or chess, there's tons of literature because the game does not change. Is there a lot of material, Jerry, you find that is useful, that's going to be useful as you know, even with new sets, there's just these fundamental ideas that you can teach the new players to be, like, far better than they currently
are.
Yeah,
for sure. Like, for the most part, it just covers basic stuff. You know, just, like, tempo, metagaming, all that random stuff. And there's a few instances where he gives examples with certain cards that, you know, in a few years are not going to be very well known or whatever, but he's got, like, some color pictures in his book and stuff, too, so.
I also meant in general. So you think, like, you would...
Yeah, like, 2 years down the line, the book is still going to be relevant, and that's probably what he was going for, at least I assume. You know, there's no reason to really put out something where it's just going to be outdated.
All right. I meant you specifically. Oh. Would you be interested in something like that?
Oh,
or?
Okay. All right, kind of just switch gears and trick me. But,
sorry. I wasn't clear.
Revenge for the mind trick. Good for you, buddy.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you could probably do a little bit of both, where some of the stuff is, you know, kind of like the stuff I was talking about with Jabin's book, where you just talk about the basic stuff that in a few years will be relevant, rather than just like, okay, you know, this is how you want to sideboard with Valakut against Blue-Black, because you can tell them that, but it might not necessarily be relevant a couple of years from now.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely down for something like that if it ever gets put together.
Okay. I'm sure Chapin's is pretty good, right?
Chapin's what?
Chapin's book?
Yeah, his book's good.
Yeah, it's legit. I learned a lot from it. I mean, just reading it helped take my game up 100 rating points, truth be told.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I'm sure that it's probably pretty sick. I should read it. Maybe it'll help me out.
It was good, you know, it really helped me. Like, some of the things that I just picked up were, you know, like, I never really was very good at, I love playing control decks, but I was never good at managing my life as a resource, you know, and considering it as such. So it's just the little stupid things like that that kind of really help sharpen up a lot of the basics.
That's not the right? Stupid things, though. That's the stuff that matters.
Yeah, no, and that's my point, right? Like, recognizing when I knew I had the fire, like I was just running well, you know, over the course of a week or something. I'm like, you know what? I've been playing so shit hot. Yeah, I'm going to go to that fucking PTQ and I end up X2ing it or something. You know what I mean? Like, just knowing when you're running well and paying attention to trends, it was pretty legit. Like, it's so good. I definitely recommend it to anyone that is on the fence about it. For sure. Yeah, Jesse just puts in the chat window, wow, Go for the Throats are $2. Remember Path to Exile?
Yeah, but that was like Path to Exile.
It's premium removal in a small set at the uncommon slot. Like, it's $2, not $5, right? But it's $2 for a reason.
Anyway. All right, I still have mine, and I have some of those promo foil ones that are really nice. Path to Exile.
Ditto. Yeah.
I have a stash of cards.
I know Jerry doesn't. You don't really like collect the cards, right, Jerry? You don't have your own collection, but
no, I've sold my collection multiple times.
What about you, Adam? Do you like collect the cards?
I was talking to KYT about this, I think, last night. Yeah, I have like tons and tons of boxes of like random cards, like some of them junk and some of them pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I used to do a lot of trading and a lot of, like, at tournaments, and then I started winning a lot more, so I didn't have as much time. So my collection kind of fell by the wayside, and then now I really don't have, like, many Type 2 cards. Like, I have Jaces and stuff, but it's kind of – I have, like, half a collection, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's decent.
See, I'm like the type who has to have all the cards right when they come out so that I can just sleeve up anything anytime and test. I love it.
It's pretty nice. Now I don't really play as many tournaments besides, like, PTs and stuff, so it's not as necessary.
Who is it?
Peter, like, on the grind, it's good to have.
I thought he was going to talk about FNM. He's talking about Pro Tours, man. Fuck.
Yeah. I think last I heard, he claimed to have won a GP with, like, some Dark Depths deck that Jerry made or something.
That was pretty sweet.
Well, cool. Do we want to do shout-outs, or you guys, anyone else want to add anything?
I'm good.
Ditto. I got nothing.
All right.
Read my new articles at tcgplayer.com. Also, my friend Gerard Fabiano wanted me to give a shout out to his new site. It's the number 3thingstoknow.com.
That site's sweet.
A bunch of absurd, like, ideas on a topic, 3 things about it, and they're useful and will help you.
Jesse, go ahead.
Shout outs, man. Man, I suck at these. A big shout out to Adam and Jerry for joining us. It's awesome, guys. Maybe we can topple our last epic, most downloaded podcast this time. So I'll just leave it at you two guys. That's my shout outs.
Scott, I'm sort of blanking.
Thanks for having us.
So, big ups to you guys for joining us and talking the cutting edge tech with us just before some major events. So that's fantastic. Also, so for next week, looks like we've got we figured out who's going to join us next week on the podcast to fill Jay's absence. The secret here is that it's not just going to be one person that will be joining us next week, so stay tuned. It's going to be a wild ride. Also, I guess shout outs to Kay Vashon on Twitter. The dude hooked me up with my my Maelstrom Pulse foil for my deck, so that's awesome. Made me happy. And I think that's really all I've got for this week. I'm fucking dying.
Of course. Okay, I'll finish it off before Jerry gives his shout-outs. Thanks to Jerry once again. As usual, you are awesome. You've been on many podcasts. You've been on Magic Show. You've just been, you know, doing anything to for the Magic community, and, you know, I thank you for that.
Or I'm just being a media whore.
That too. Adam, of course, thanks a lot for joining us. It meant a lot to me for you to be here with us.
Thank you.
And the question I have to ask you, listening to all of us sort of our theories, what is, if you had to snap pick a deck for Paris, what would it be?
I'll probably play blue-white if it was tomorrow.
Blue-white gravitational shift, right?
Yeah.
And then just practice sealed all week, right?
Correct. I'll just draft a bunch of pack ones, get a feel for it.
And with that, Jerry, go ahead to finish us off.
Like I said, I got nothing. Everyone is is pretty awesome.
Right.
What would you play if Paris was tomorrow?
And I was going?
Yes.
Probably Cold Author Red, because it's the deck I'm most excited for.
Nice.
Awesome.
Tell me, Adam. I told you. And with that, we are done. Join us next time for episode 25.
Oh, shit.